The British actor John Hurt has given acclaimed performances as outcasts and extravagant personalities. He starred as the deformed John Merrick in the film The Elephant Man, and he played the flamboyant and defiant homosexual Quentin Crisp in The Naked Civil Servant. In the BBC series I, Claudius, he starred as the Emperor Caligula, and in Midnight Express he was a strung-out English junkie. John Hurt stars in the new film Scandal, which is based on the Profumo sex scandal that rocked the British government in the early 60s. John Profumo, the British war minister, resigned after the press reported his affair with Good Time girl Christine Keeler. She was simultaneously having an affair with a Russian rumored to be a spy. Hurt plays Stephen Ward, a society doctor who took the young Keeler under his wing and groomed her to be a more refined party girl, worthy of the political and society leaders he introduced her to. When the scandal broke, Ward was arrested and accused of living on the earnings of prostitutes. John Hurt was urged by some of his colleagues not to take the role of Stephen Ward.
The reason for that, I think, is that we took quite a lot of flack from the establishment, who really closed ranks and would rather not have what I've come to call the poor old Jack syndrome, meaning Jack Profumo, to be dragged through it again. This, of course, was an attitude taken by people that had not read the script and certainly not seen the film. And I suppose it's quite understandable that they thought we'd be making some sort of salacious film, which, of course, was never the intention and not the result. And I think the attitude has changed somewhat since the film has come out.
Since you're playing a character that actually lived, did you go back and read articles and books on the Profumo scandal?
Yes, I did. I read what I thought was necessary. Basically, a performance, I think, still comes from an imaginative exercise, really coming from the script. And the script writer, Michael Thomas, had done most of the research for me, in a sense.
The character that you play, Stephen Ward, is something of a hedonist and a sexual connoisseur. He loves to sketch naked women, to go to orgies, to match older men with young women. And I want to play a short clip from the film in which your character, Stephen Ward, is at one such party.
Right.
I have always had a preference for what the Americans call heavy petting. Well, it's something that I was studying over there at college in Missouri. But I adore the so painfully slow escalation of touch and caress. Tiny nibbling kisses. Sigh of silk on milk-white flesh. I love the ache.
Monsieur?
Can go on for hours and hours.
Stephen, you're such a tease.
One of the interesting things about the character that you play is, in a way, he's all talk when it comes to sex. There's never any evidence in the movie that he ever indulges himself. Did you have to get into the psychology of that and understand how a character would be so interested in and absorbed in sex, yet never seem to have any himself, never care to?
I think he did have a certain amount. I don't think he was a particularly successful lover. Yes, I think his turn on, if you like, was more in the talk about it and watching it and putting people into that position. Yes, there was definitely a great deal of the voyeur in him.
You always have a cigarette dangling from your lip in Scandal, and you make the character look like such an experienced smoker, the kind of smoker who could be doing anything while smoking. Are you an experienced smoker yourself?
I do smoke, yes. I have to confess that I do smoke. I'm not that I'm trying to put a spanner in the works of the American dream of utopia by the year 2000 and a smokeless society, but at the moment I do smoke, yes.
John Hurt is my guest, and he stars in the new movie Scandal. You've played several roles of outcasts and extravagant personalities, The Elephant Man, The Naked Civil Servant. Do you feel like you have a special affinity with that kind of role?
It's never been designed on my part. I certainly can't deny that from, say, Caligula and I, Claudius, to Quentin Crisp, Naked Civil Servant, that these are not anything other than flamboyant people. I have played, of course, many other parts that are not in that area of flamboyance.
Do you ever see yourself that way? As being,
do I see myself?
Yeah,
that
as being
way?
No, unusual or having any
extravagances. I certainly don't see myself as Caligula.
No. No, but
I have been offered Caligula 3 times, and that was the time that I played it, so I sometimes wonder what is in my personality that makes people think of me in that direction.
You play the Elephant Man, John Merrick. Well, let me explain who John Merrick was for our listeners who don't know. He was the man who became known as the Elephant Man, who was severely deformed, grotesquely deformed. You played him as someone who, although having a grotesque exterior, had a refined, elegant, artistic spirit. Was it written that way, or was that something you read into the character?
That's something that I felt it was. That's certainly what I felt, and I think that David Lynch felt the same thing, the director. Yes, I mean, the simple thesis of that film is that people are not what they seem to be according to their looks.
I'd like to play a short clip from this movie, which I think just illustrates this refinement of spirit that you have in the film. And I should say before we hear it that your character's mouth is deformed and his speech is slurred, so our listeners might have a little bit of trouble following the exact speech. But this is a scene where Anne Bancroft, as a great lady of the stage, comes and visits John Merrick and introduces herself, and he's very excited to meet someone of the theater.
Well, Mr. Treve tells me that you're in the theater. Do you live there?
Oh, no, Mr. Merrick, I just work there.
Well, it must be wonderful just to work there. It's beautiful.
You've never been?
I'm afraid not.
Oh, Mr. Merrick, you must go. The theater's the most beautiful place on earth. Of course, I am a bit partial. The theater is romance.
When you say romance, oh yes, at the end there, there's so much yearning in the voice that you communicate. I think it's a really beautiful moment in the film.
It is, yes. It was a wonderful script, I have to say. It was a wonderful script to play. And the Elephant Man, in a sense, embodies everything which is misunderstood in us all. And I think I feel that's probably why people feel such a great empathy for him.
Well, I'd like to ask you about the speech style that you developed for the character, a kind of high and airy voice and a constant, like, slurping. what position was your mouth in when you were underneath all the makeup and had to speak?
Well, it was fairly twisted because I had also gums over my teeth, which had a very peculiar kind of irregular protruding teeth of their own. So it developed in a sense. It was the whole voice came from instead of the Elephant Man having his own difficulties in speaking, I had my own difficulties with what was already in my mouth, and used it to advantage rather than letting it impede what I was trying to do.
In a way, your performance in The Elephant Man reminds me of Charles Laughton's performance in The Hunchback of Notre Dame, in the sense that I think they're both brilliant performances, yet the face and the voice of the actor in each is unrecognizable. Is it like working with a hand tied behind your back, knowing that your real face isn't visible and it will be harder to communicate facial expressions and you have to use a different voice than the one you're accustomed to using?
Well, that is true. I mean, Elephant Man, obviously, the voice was an enormous amount of my armory, as it were. And also, rather than using facial expression, I work quite a lot with a mirror, and almost in a sculpturesque way, understanding how to use my body or the inclination of the head in order to say something.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like working with a mask, in a sense. But the voice was obviously enormously important.
I want to bring up Charles Laughton again. He said something that is one of my favorite comments about acting. He once said that people don't know what they're like, and I think I can show them. I think it's a beautiful statement about acting. And I think really that the best acting is somehow about what it is to be human. And I wonder if you ever feel that way about acting.
Oh, I mean, you're talking about one of my favorite actors anyway. I think Charles Laughton was one of the greats. And I completely agree with that statement. It's perhaps an arrogant one, but I understand what he means.
And do you feel that you go about that pursuit in an intuitive way or in an intellectual one?
I think it's a mixture, really. Eventually, it's going to be intuitive. But obviously, one uses one's intelligence as much as possible in order to feed the computer of the mind, if you like, with the right stuff, in order to be intuitive.
For the movie The Elephant Man, you had to spend hours getting makeup applied every day. It must be terribly boring to have to endure that.
Well, you'd think so, certainly, to just have it mentioned like that. But in actual fact, I had to take a real participant's part in it. It was a seven-hour makeup, and everything had to be watched. It was prosthetic makeup, and it was quite early days for that sort of prosthetics. People are much more proficient these days. Probably wouldn't have taken quite so long now. But at that time, if it was a millimetre out, we'd have to start again. So, I mean, there was the makeup man, his assistant, and myself, and we were all taking a very concentrated part in the application of the makeup. So, actually, 7 hours passed much more quickly than you'd think.
When you looked at yourself in the mirror with all the Elephant Man makeup on, did you recognize yourself?
It's very hard to say, isn't it? I mean, I was looking at myself from the other side of my eyes, if you like. I was looking, hopefully, as John Merrick in the mirror, and trying to find a way of, at the same time, as technically be able to get over what I wanted to say. It's very hard to describe that one, I must admit.
Did the experience end up giving you any different feeling about your real voice and real face?
I think certainly that one felt an enormous gratitude that one of us had at least some sort of attraction. It was quite a humbling experience to realize, to be in the skin of that poor man, understanding how difficult life was, and at the same time, a kind of sanctity that allowed him to be what he was at the same underneath it all.
As I mentioned before, I thought your performance in it was really brilliant. I was wondering if, when you took on the role, if you were ever concerned that people would just see it as a lot of really good makeup, special effects, and not really see the performance behind the makeup.
That would have been disaster, I must say. But I don't think I allowed myself to think that at the time. I couldn't possibly allow myself to think negatively about it.
Mm-hmm. How did you get the role, by the way?
Well, it was a very high compliment, I must say. It came from David Lynch, who particularly wanted me to play it on the grounds that he'd seen two things before. One was called The Naked Civil Servant, where I played an effeminate homosexual exhibitionist called Quentin Crisp. And the other thing he'd seen was Caligula and I, Claudius, both of which, he said, he felt that the actor got completely lost and he believed that that character was alive for him in front of him, which, as far as I'm concerned, is the highest compliment he could have paid me. And he needed an actor like that, he felt, for The Elephant Man. So that's how it came about.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about The Naked Civil Servant, where you played Quentin Crisp, as you just described, who was a very flamboyant homosexual who wore makeup and dyed his hair back when being homosexual was still officially illegal in England. How are you cast in that role?
That's an interesting story, too. Philip Mackey, who wrote the piece, I knew him quite well, and I was in a London actors' club, and we were just mucking about, really, one evening, and it occurred to him that at that moment, that I'd be right for Quentin Crisp, which he was trying to get off the ground as a film. And that's how that started. 3 years later, we made it, finally, having been turned down by the BBC and having been turned down by Wardour Street, which is the British film industry equivalent of Hollywood, really. And we made it for Thames Television. 90-minute film.
Some heterosexual actors are reluctant to take on homosexual roles for fear, A, that some people might assume that they're homosexual and they might be fearful of being typed as that, or B, they might think that homosexuals will think that they're inauthentic in the role. Did you have any fears about taking on such a role?
I never had any qualms at all. It was a brilliant script for a start.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have the slightest qualms. I had many people actually suggest to me that I shouldn't play it for those reasons. They said Peter Finch played Oscar Wilde and he didn't work for 3 years after that, and Dirk Bogarde didn't work for some time after he'd made a film called Victim in the 60s. But it seemed to me that the piece was about the tenderness of the individual as opposed to the cruelty of the crowd, in a sense, and it was a superb piece of writing. And it really did not occur to me to turn it down.
Let me play a very brief clip from the movie, and this is John Hurt starring as Quentin Crisp.
I am an effeminate homosexual. I want to win the admiration. I want to be found desirable by a great, dark man.
Yes.
But what proof have I that I'm desired? No great, dark man is going to come up to me and say, Quentin, I adore you, your eyes are like stars and your lips are like roses.
No.
A tangible note is proof. A proof I understand.
Your voice reminds me a little of Katharine Hepburn there.
Well, I mean, the thing about Quentin, the way in which he speaks, is that he knows what he's going to say, how he's going to say it, and when he's going to say it. So that it's very deliberate. Very deliberate and quite a high camp kind of delivery.
I've met Quentin Crisp and read one of his books, and he strikes me as someone who really lives life as theater. And I've met a lot of people like that, who kind of dress for the part that they've decided to play, and really, add a certain theater to life as well. And I wonder if you could relate to that, and if you've ever been like that yourself.
No, I would say that I was the absolute opposite of that, really. I know exactly what you mean. Quentin does. I mean, he has decided to live his life theatrically.
Mm-hmm. And he's very good at it.
And extremely good at it, yes. A highly intelligent man, very good writer, too. And also lives according to his philosophy, which is extremely generous and patient philosophy, I might say. But no, I would say that I was quite the opposite of that. My personal life is not a theatrical one, really.
So your theatrical stuff is confined to the stage?
I would have thought so, yes. You know, unless you catch me in a flamboyant mood.
Right. Are you invigorated or exhausted by people who do see their own life as theatre?
Oh, it depends. I mean...
Depends on the person.
It depends entirely on whether they ought to see their life as theatrical.
Have you ever auditioned for a role that you realized totally didn't suit you?
Yes, I have. Yes. Gandhi.
What didn't that? Suit you about that?
Well, I mean, at one stage, Richard Attenborough wanted me to play Gandhi. And I met with people in Hollywood at the Lingerie, rather special restaurant in Los Angeles. We raised glasses of champagne to the project and so on. All of this, of course, was subject to a makeup test. And when I got back to England, I did the makeup test, and I went in there, and they put brown all over my face and scraped my hair back, put me in what I could only call as a rather large diaper, and sent me on in front of the camera to do a bit of Indian acting, you know? And so I did a bit of that. And when we looked at the rushes the next day, the dailies, we looked at each other afterwards, and... Dickie said, well, I don't think it's going to be possible to you, John. I said, certainly not, Dickie. It is. It looks like a Welsh rugby football player in a nappy. So, yes, I don't think that was. I don't think that was would have made a particularly good performance somehow.
Were you terribly disappointed?
Not in a sense, no, because I didn't. I though it's a part that if it came your way, you wouldn't dream of turning down. But I do think you had to have Indian blood to play it, and I think Ben Kingsley was the perfect choice.
Have you ever found out too late that you were wrong for a role? Did you ever accept one that you were sorry you did?
I've accepted the odd thing that I'm sorry I did, but not because I felt that I was wrong for it.
What was the reason then you were sorry?
Maybe other things that... arguments with, perhaps, with directors or something like that.
Would you mention such
or
a role?
The way in which they were looking at it that I disagreed with and things of that nature, yeah.
Would you care to mention the role, or would you rather not?
No, I'd rather not.
Okay. Actor John Hurt is my guest, and he starred in The Elephant Man, I, Claudius, The Naked Civil Servant, 1984. Your father was a clergy... Oh, and he stars in the new movie Scandal. Your father was a clergyman. Did you have a
yes,
religious...
Yes, that's right. He still is.
Oh, good, okay. Did you have a religious upbringing?
He's 85 years old and he's still working. Yes, I did. I had a very religious upbringing. As a Church of England clergyman, which is Episcopalian here, that's how I was brought up.
When you were young, were you held back from doing certain things that the other kids did because your father was a clergyman?
Yes, certain things. Certain things. My parents, for instance, I was never allowed to go to Saturday morning pictures, you know, things like that for children. They considered that to be a bit common. And also, by the very nature of being a clergyman's son, people tend to put you slightly apart, which is, you tend to live a life at some stages as being, people being suspicious of you and puts you rather on a, I don't mean lonely particularly, but it does tend to put you apart.
If you didn't get to go to the movies when you were young, what interested you in acting?
Oh, acting.
Right. Where were you
Without
exposed
question.
To it?
Not looking, but doing.
So, had you seen a lot of acting before you started getting interested in it yourself?
Oh, I'd seen quite a bit, yes, because my parents were lovers of the theatre, and I used to go to the local repertory company quite frequently. But, I mean, what really gave me the passion for it was actually first appearing on a stage in a school play when I was 9 years old, I think, mm-hmm. and I was in the school play every year from that time.
You went to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Eventually, yes.
Did you see yourself in the tradition of Gielgud? Did you want to be a great stage actor?
Oh, my God. I mean, that was one of the things that absolutely terrified me when I went to the Royal Academy. I thought everybody was going to be like Olivier and Gielgud. I found it very daunting, very frightening, because I had such huge admiration for them. I soon found out when I got to the Royal Academy that they were not all like that, however. They were terrific inspiration, but I never thought that I would be, as it were, in the same area of perfection.
Do you think that the British tradition of acting is much different than the American? And I'm wondering if you relate to the style of American actors like Robert De Niro.
Oh, I certainly do, yes. I think Robert De Niro is a brilliant screen actor. But then I wouldn't say that Robert De Niro is peculiarly unlike the British approach, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Or Robert Duvall, for that matter.
What would you consider the British approach to be?
Well, I would say that the... If there's, it's a gross generalisation, but the British tradition basically is to go to the character. And the Hollywood tradition, shall we say, is basically to take the character to the performer.
Would you explain that?
Well, I mean, in order, the British tradition is to go to the character, right? So you become the character.
Mm-hmm.
The Hollywood tradition is to make the character become yourself. You take the, so you use your own personality, as in Cary Grant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas Alec Guinness, for instance, will go to the character and he will become that character. And I would say that if there was, and I think that Robert De Niro does that.
Let's look at your new movie, Scandal. How did you try to become the character?
By imagining to be that character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Basically. Obviously, one takes, you research as much as you can, you gather all the information you can put it in the think tank and let it ferment, as it were. And finally, things start making themselves clear. But it's an imaginative exercise in the end.
Was it hard for you to make the jump from theatre to screen in England?
From theatre to screen?
Mm-hmm.
Not really, no. I was doing a play at the time that Fred Zinnemann was casting Man for All Seasons, and he saw me doing something there, and I got Man for All Seasons from doing a play. So they've always been kind of interlinked, as far as I'm concerned.
Let me ask you a Mel Brooks question. He has cast you in cameos in at least two of his movies, Spaceballs.
Oh, I know. He's miserable. He's miserable. He keeps getting me to come over and do things for... I'd just like you to do this, John. I mean, it's just a favour. There's no money in it, but, you know, just come over and do me a favour. And I fall for it every time, so I come over here and play Jesus Christ in...
History of the World, Part 1,
and then I did... reenacted the alien... rather painful birth in Spaceballs. And he got me for nothing both times. He'd probably get me a third time for nothing. You never know. He's very clever at it.
Well, he produced The Elephant Man, but where does your relationship date back to?
Well, that's what it does date back to. He was a brilliant producer of that. He was terrific. He was the executive producer, and without him, I don't think David Lynch would have had that break. And he was tremendously helpful in getting a difficult film like that through the net.
Do you enjoy doing comedy?
Love it, yes. Don't do enough of it, though.
Let me ask you, there was a period in America, I guess it was in the early 80s, when you were becoming better known. William Hurt was starting his career, and John Hurd was starting his career. And yeah. I think a lot of people got all the names confused, and the faces weren't all that familiar yet. Were you aware of that?
Oh, definitely, yes. I think it's even in Trivial Pursuits, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Oh, I didn't know.
I think so.
I've never played...
The original Trivial Pursuits, I think it said, who played the Elephant Man, William Hurt, John Hurd, or John Hurt? Yeah.
So did that ever have any direct effects on you, the confusion?
I don't know. I don't think it's had any direct effect, no. But I do know people will sometimes come and congratulate me for something William's done, and William's told me that he's had the same thing vice versa.
Is this the kind of problem that you run into when you're so good that you really do lose yourself in a role, that people see the role and they don't necessarily connect it to the next performance because you change?
Well, it could be. It could be. Yes, I hope that's the case.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you indeed.